This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome back to Equity Mates Investing, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us for the first time, a huge welcome. My name is Bryce, and today we are bringing back our returning guest to the studio, Roger Montgomery, to chat through today's interview. Joining me also in the studio is my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. Roger is never one to pull his punches. When he has an opinion, he's happy to share it. And we wanted to get him back on because he recently wrote a white paper. With part of the heading was just in all caps, "It's time to deploy cash."
Love it.
As I said, not one to pull punches, and we wanted to understand why Roger is thinking that way.
Yeah, why is now the time? So we're going to start macro, get his view on what's happening across the world with inflation, interest rates, economic growth, you name it, and then dig into some of the stocks that are, you know, he's actually deploying cash into at the moment, and hopefully we get to touch on Bitcoin as well because I know he's written a bit about that too. So plenty to cover in this episode.
Nice. Well, look, without further ado, let's get into our conversation with Roger Montgomery.
Well, Roger, welcome to Equity Mates.
Great to be with you, Bryce and Alex. Awesome to be back.
Really excited for this one because we're going to get straight into it. You've recently written a white paper called Interest Rates, The Best It Gets. It's Time to Deploy Cash. Very eye-catching. So we want to break that down a bit. And one of the opening quotes was, "The current economic backdrop combined with relatively attractive interest rates presents a variety of investment options greater than we've seen since before the pandemic." So before we get into what those options are, let's start with the macro. How would you sum up where we're currently at the moment?
I think a lot of investors and a lot of commentators get distracted by the, you know, the monthly data, the unemployment rate, the inflation rate, all sorts of nuanced data that changes month to month. What's really important is the bigger picture. So if we take a step back from that monthly data and we just think about what works for equities, then what we know is that perhaps uniquely, but without exception, since the 1970s, whenever you've had a combination of disinflation and positive economic growth, in other words, even if the growth is anemic, as long as it's above zero, and inflation is slowing, that's what disinflation is, as distinct from deflation. Deflation being declining prices. We don't want that, but we want lower rates of inflation. Whenever we've had the combination of those two things, innovative growth stocks with pricing power have done extremely well for investors. That's precisely the environment we had last year in 2023. It's also the environment that we've got now. Here's the interesting thing, though. Last year, I wrote an article in The Australian, I write, you know, each fortnight in the Wealth section. Last year, I said it was November 22, and then in May 23, I wrote, "We've got this combination, disinflation, positive economic growth. It's going to be great for innovative growth stocks with pricing power. And small caps are replete. There's 1,800 small caps in Australia. They're replete with innovative companies that are growing at double-digit rates. So this is going to be great for small caps. Load up. Well, I got that bit wrong, because innovative growth stocks with pricing power did do well in 2023, but only seven of them. Right? Magnificent Seven. And by the way, as an aside, we've got to talk about these labels like FANG and Nifty 50, You know, and Magnificent Seven. It's all garbage, by the way, because people just put the ones that are going up the most together and give them a name. Right? There's no other thing that's common amongst them other than they've gone up a lot.
Well, we've been talking about the latest one, which is the granolas. Goldman Sachs labeled 11 European stocks the granolas.
Right.
But they've just basically taken the biggest European stocks, ex-industrials, and jammed them together, and it's like meaningless.
It's novel. Well, no, it's not meaningless if you're a big institution and you want to launch an ETF, you know, called the granola ETF. Just raise a whole bunch of money and earn fees.
Yeah.
It works for that. Anyway, so what happened last year was these seven stocks did well. Now, they were innovative. They were growing, with perhaps the exception of Tesla, and they did have pricing power with the exception of Tesla. And I think the reason why the bets were concentrated on those mega cap companies is because people wanted safety. They wanted safety because they want liquidity. They want liquidity. They want to be able to get out quickly because there were still fears about a recession.
Mm.
Now, what's happened is the narrative's changed. So what's happened is we've gone from an environment where rates were rising and there were fears that they could go up more to an acceptance that rates have peaked and they might go down. We've also gone from fear of a recession to acceptance of a soft landing. And because of those two things previously, everyone was worried about corporate earnings. And we've seen in reporting season that those concerns have been alleviated or allayed. And so the consequence of all that is, on top of all those things, the big caps have done well, the small caps have been left behind, and you've now got a gap in terms of performance of about 25%, and that's the biggest gap we've seen between big caps and small caps since before the GFC. And the result of that is, I think, that this year people will feel much more comfortable about adopting more risk, and so they'll buy smaller companies because the macroeconomic backdrop, they'll realise, is quite benign.
So that is, I guess, you know, you said don't worry too much about the month-to-month figures when it comes to inflation. And
you're not investing month-to-month, right? You're not investing for next month.
So I guess from a bigger picture perspective, you think what we've sort of experienced over the last, call it 6 months, where disinflation and economic growth, you think that's going to be the trend?
Yes.
A bit longer term?
I do. Yeah. And disinflation, very long term, because I think AI and automation will displace a lot of jobs, which will put downward pressure on wages. And you can't have 3% inflation if you don't have 3% wage growth. Mm. And I think longer term we're going to see wage growth is going to slow quite remarkably. And that will put downward pressure on the inflation rate. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, my view is don't worry about the month to month. You know, I get asked all the time, you know, who do you think's going to win this election? Well, I don't really care. Why don't you care who's going to win the election? Because there'll be another one in 3 years' time. You know, hey, you're watching the budget this year? No, why not? There'll be a budget next year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we're investing for longer than that.
Mm.
Don't get distracted by all this noise. You know, focus on what's important. We'll talk about that today, I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah.
We've got to touch on inflation, though, and I guess interest rates more recently. I think at the start of the year we had the Fed saying they're going to cut 3 to 6 times.
Yes.
We've had the RBA allude to a cut later in the year, and it feels like in the space of 2 or 3 weeks that rhetoric is now changing to maybe it's going to be once or twice, maybe not at all. So how are you factoring that into, I guess,
You've just answered my point.
I knew you know, that
you've
would just be reinforced.
Yeah, I'm surprised you asked that question. Yeah. To be honest,
just reinforced the point. You know, it changes. So why invest on that basis?
I guess it's because you said that you feel that people now feel like there's more safety, but yes. in an environment where it's changed in a matter of a quarter from people investing off on rhetoric that is coming out of these.
So like buy a house and borrow money because interest rates are going to start zero till 2020. Exactly. Like
people listen to what these guys say. You know?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, don't.
I think Roger does it.
I've done this for 33 years and I've seen lots of people say things and get it wrong.
Mm.
You know, so my view is just ignore all that. Turn off, you know, the idea, and I wrote about it in my book, Valuable, years ago. Mm. You know, it's now 12-year-old book and it's as relevant today.
We've got a copy here somewhere.
It's as relevant today as it was then, and that is just turn the noise off, turn the stock market off, focus on what's important. What's important is buying quality businesses that have a long runway for growth, that might have a tailwind behind them. They're high quality, they've got little debt, you know, they generate great margins, they've got high rates of return on equity, and you'll make a lot of money doing that by not listening to the market, by taking advantage of it. So what will happen, I'll give you a framework that answers your question more specifically. At the beginning of this year, everyone was enthused about the fact that we could get 3 rate cuts this year, right? The Fed was talking about that. Jerome Powell talked about it. And it was mentioned at the RBA as well that we could see cuts towards the end of the year. So then what happens is the market gets excited and prices start to go up. Right. Do you get excited and jump on that? Could they be right? Most people are probably wrong. So what you do is you say, you know what, prices are now expensive or more expensive than they were. I'm going to be disciplined about the prices that I pay. I'll wait for the market to be disappointed. Then what happens is, hey, we're not going to raise rates. We're not going to cut rates 3 times this year. It looks like it might only be once or it might only be twice. Market gets disappointed.
Mm.
Market sells off. Guess what? Now you're zigging when everyone else is zagging. Now you say, okay, now I can buy these high-quality businesses cheaper than they were 3 months ago. Now I'm going to buy them. Because what will happen is people will work out rates will only be cut once, but it actually doesn't matter whether they're cut once, twice, 3 times. That's not why we're investing. We're investing in this business because it's growing its profits at 35% per annum. It's got a 75% margin and it all drops to the bottom line and shareholders get all of those rewards. And if because rates are only going to be cut once, the PE contracts, you know, the price to earnings multiple goes from 35 to 25, ship it in. I'll buy heaps of that. And guess what? Because I know within the next 5 years, the PE will go back up to 35 for some reason.
Mm.
You know, somebody that the market doesn't like resigns and then everyone gets excited again. And you know, as I said right at the start, I've been around 33 years. I've seen the market get excited, gets disappointed. And as sure as night follows day or day follows night, it'll get excited again.
Mm-hmm.
So buy when the market isn't excited, buy when the market's disappointed, buy quality, and then just hang on and wait for the market to be excited again.
Mm.
Don't worry about whether the rates are going to be cut 3 times or once. You know, if it's only cut once and the market's disappointed, that's a gift.
Love it.
Bryce is going to have to find something else to do with his spare time rather than watching the RBA.
Hey, look, I write about it too. You know, I'm commenting all the time, but the background is that, you know, it's noise.
Yeah.
It's noise and it's potentially a distraction. But I'm writing about it in the context, you know, in our blog and in The Australian, I'm writing about it in the context of taking advantage of it.
Mm.
Benjamin Graham once said, it's not the market's wisdom that you want to focus on. It's its wallet. Right, you want to take advantage of its depression, not get sucked in by its optimism.
Mm. Mm. Now, I want to move to stocks and talk about where you're seeing innovative growth companies.
Sure.
I also actually want to give a shout out to your book, Valuable. I think it's one of my favourites. So if people haven't read it, I'm going to second that endorsement.
Yes.
Your white paper was, it's time to deploy cash. It's time to deploy cash into the market, or are you seeing attractive opportunities in other asset classes as well?
Okay, so I'm particularly excited in equities about small caps. And we'll talk, you know, I've got 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or Great. 7 or however many you want. We can you know, mention a few of them. So I'm excited about small caps because they've underperformed and the environment is still very supportive of those innovative growth companies with pricing power that I talked about earlier. And smalls have underperformed. So I think they'll catch up. People will look down the market cap spectrum and say, hey, you know what, we can deploy a bit more risk because things aren't as dangerous as they were before. We think they're safer. So people will, and that process, by the way, takes a couple of years. So I think the market, the equity market, will do well for the next 2 years. You know, out to 2026, I think we'll see, it takes time for the inertia, for people's fears to dissipate. And then that's why markets trend, because it takes time for that information to be distributed. And then even after the information's distributed, it takes time for people to be convinced. And so, you know, that's why markets will trend, and it takes a couple of years for people, for the risk to be adopted by everybody. We'll have another conversation in early 2026, and I suspect it will be, hey, look, the market's super expensive at the moment. Everyone's really, really optimistic, and I'm not. You know, and yeah. I think now you need to be cautious. So in answer to your question, though, the other area where I think that there's going to be a lot of interest this year is in private credit. And that's because the returns are really attractive because interest rates are higher than they were. And a lot of these private credit funds, you know, they're lending money to small and medium corporates in Australia and elsewhere in the world at really attractive rates now compared to the past. And that means you can get on your cash, shouldn't put all your cash in these things, but you can get on a portion of your cash, you can get 9, 10, 11% per annum paid monthly as cash. So for a lot of retirees, and I know that there may not be a lot of them listening to your program because it's probably a younger audience listening to your program, which is exciting because there's a younger audience of people coming through who we can help not make the same mistakes that I made when I was young, like technical analysis, for example. You just don't need that. And I'll explain why that's nonsense later on. But, you know, I think there's an audience of people who are looking for a better return on their cash. If you put money in a term deposit, for example, you're going to get a reasonable return. You know, you might get 5%, but it's going to be paid at the end of the year. There are a lot of retirees at the moment who need the money. They're spending money each week, each month. And so in private credit, they have the ability to earn extraordinarily attractive returns, and as long as they understand the risks, and they're getting paid monthly. So I think this year is the year for small caps, and it's also the year for private credit. I think private credit will actually become an asset class, you know, its own asset class, and financial planners will start allocating more and more money to private credit. It's been the preserve of high net worth and ultra high net worth and family offices for years. It's big in the United States. It's big in Europe. You know, it dominates lending in the US and Europe, and it's only just starting here. Now, 10 years ago, if you had said to me, Roger, I'm thinking about, you know, Alex, if you said to me, I'm thinking about lending money to a medium-sized corporate doing some direct lending, and if you'd said that actually 15 years ago, you know, around before the GFC, I would have said, you got rocks in your head. Because the banks had that market stitched up. They were lending to those businesses. So the only businesses you could lend to were the ones the banks had rejected. They were higher risk. Banks didn't want them, so they've turned to you. That's changed because post-GFC, the bank, you know, all of the legislation requiring banks to hold more capital and all the inquiries that we've had and royal commissions that we've had, not just in Australia, by the way, but the re-regulation of banks in the United States and in Europe after the GFC, it's meant that it's no longer as profitable for them to lend to small and medium corporates in Australia. And that's left a $200 billion gap or $220 billion gap between what small and medium corporates want to borrow for growth and what's available to them from the banks. And so non-bank lenders are now stepping in to fill that void. So now it's a legitimate asset class for direct investors. And that's why I think it's going to be an important asset class for people's portfolios.
How do we get access to it?
Well, there are a lot of funds, and there's a lot you need to know about these funds. They're all different. Some of them have lockups, for example. Mm. Some don't. You know, you don't want to be locked into something. You want weekly or monthly access. You know, some of them invest in a concentrated small group of very large loans. Maybe you don't want that. Maybe you'd rather have thousands and thousands of small loans because that's more diversified. Some of them are focused on individual industries. For example, property development. I wouldn't want to lend to a property developer. I think that's higher risk. And so others are lending to, you know, on invoice financing or agriculture and so on, and generating really good returns. There's a fund that we support in Australia and we distribute in Australia called the Aura High Yield SME Fund. It's a wholesale fund. It's been been going 6.5 years, even during the pandemic, it's paid monthly income, generated a compounded return of about 9.6% per year, paid interest every month. It's never had a negative month. And there's been no loss of capital at any time in that period. And that 9.6% is the compounded return from reinvesting the distributions. So, you know, there's people be scratching their heads going, really? Can I get 9.6% just having my money in a fund? And by the way, no volatility. There's been no loss of capital. The unit price has stayed at a dollar the whole time. You know, that's extraordinary. And over that period of time, that 9.62% has been better than the ASX 200 ACCUM over the same period of time. And that's been volatile. This has had no volatility. So that's why, I mean, I'm pitching it to make it sound like I'm pitching the fund, but what I'm doing is pitching the asset class and saying there's a lot of merit in this asset class. The fact that the banks are pulling back has meant that you can now participate in the profits that banks were previously earning.
Wow, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Let's turn to the companies that are borrowing from these private credit markets, the small and mid-cap companies on the ASX that you think are attractive.
Yeah.
Now, you said you've got a list of companies. I'm not just going to ask you to read the list, but I guess...
happy to. always generous with the names.
We appreciate
these
that.
Are stocks we own.
Yeah.
Love for everybody to go out and buy them because that'll push the share price up and that helps us look good. But you know, you need to do your research or seek and take personal professional advice before you go and do anything.
Nice. I love it. I love it when the guest does a disclaimer for us.
Yeah.
But I guess what your hallmarks of an innovative growth company, what you're looking for, and then maybe if you can weave in some examples
Go.
Yeah.
So we're looking for businesses that are quality. So they're generating, as I said earlier, you know, they might have manageable debt or little or no debt. They've got high rates of return on equity and or very high margins, gross margins or EBITDA margins. Then they've got tailwinds. They might have a tailwind. So two examples of technology businesses that have tailwinds and they're therefore not as beholden to economic conditions. Two would be Macquarie Technology or Technologies, which is the old Macquarie Telecom Group. Macquarie Telecommunications. And the other one is Megaport. Now, both of these businesses have the AI and cloud computing tailwind behind them. The reason why I think they're ideally positioned in Australia is because the enterprise migration to the cloud, and enterprise, when I say enterprise, I mean very, very big businesses. Very, very big businesses moving to the cloud is where mobile smartphones were 10 years ago, 8 or 10 years ago. You know, we're still only probably halfway through that process. And so you're going to see more and more demand for cloud computing as these enterprises switch to the cloud. You're also seeing a lot of small businesses move to the cloud because it's egalitarian. You know, what it does is it levels the playing field. It used to be that big businesses who could afford a data room and, you know, a room as big as the one we're in now, full of racks and servers, you know, only the companies that could afford that had great websites. And only companies that could afford that and install those racks into their offices, into their premises, could produce a great UI and UX for their customers. And now, in the cloud, everyone's the same. You know, it levels the playing field, which is extraordinary. And so that's why the demand is going to keep building for cloud computing. Now, Macquarie Technologies, they have a data centre in Macquarie Park near Epping in Sydney, and they're expanding the capacity. They're building the third centre. It's called IC3 West. They're building the third data centre, but they've also upgraded its capacity by about 41%, and they generate 75% margins. Now, they work for, you know, the hyperscalers, you know, the Googles and the Amazons of the world. They work for Fortune 500 companies. Who are tenants in their data centres, and also about 42 or 43% of the federal government's departments. So they're a high-quality provider. So they're expanding capacity, and eventually they'll be full. And when they're full, they're like a REIT. They're like a real estate investment trust with class one tenants. And the demand is enormous, and that demand is meeting limited supply. Now, people will say to me, no, well, supply's not limited, Roger. Supply is increasing. There's billions and billions of dollars being invested in data centers. But a lot of the best sites are already taken. You know, you want a data center. If you're an enterprise, you want to be a data, you want to be with a data center that's close to where you're located, so your latency is the lowest it can possibly be. And so these ideally located data centers, you know, that real estate's pretty much taken. The other thing is, it takes time to build data centers, but the speed with which demand is increasing or accelerating is much greater than the demand can keep up. And so when you meet, when rising demand meets limited supply or supply that's growing slower, then prices go up. So there's an opportunity to raise prices, and again, 75% margins on every dollar of revenue, which is really attractive. Then on top of that, you've got AI. You know, and AI will simply, it's an exponential increase in demand for the use of cloud computing. You know, if I've got Microsoft Word and I'm typing an article for the Australian newspaper, you know, I connect with the cloud when I open the document, and I connect when I save the document. If I've got Grammarly or some other editing software, then I'm connecting a bit more frequently. But if I have Microsoft's Copilot installed, which will be released later this year to everybody, it's in beta release at the moment. If I have Copilot, what Copilot's going to do, it's going to sit on my shoulder watching me write my Word document and say to me, hey, Rog, do you realise that you've said this a bit nicer before, or you've said this in a way that was more approachable before? Would you like me to show you how you've said it before that was better than this? And here are four examples. So it's gone to my previous documents and looked at all those documents, read all those documents, seen what I'm writing now and said, oh, you've said this. Or if I'm drafting a really short email, it might say, Roger, that's a bit terse. You know, do you want to say that a bit friendly? Here's five ways you could say it friendly, and it still sounds like you because I've accessed your previous emails. Think about how many hundreds of times a second or thousands of times a second I'm now communicating with the cloud. But the consequence of that is that the demand is exponential, and companies can charge more for it. That's why we like this company. Now, we also think it's good value. So we think it's currently trading at $75 or $80 at the moment, around that price. I haven't looked at it in recent days. We think with a 9% discount rate, it's probably, knowing what we know about the capacity increases that it's got and what it charges for that capacity, we think it's worth between $100 and $115 a share, and it's trading at $75 to $80. Here's the interesting thing, though. Once it's full, and it's just throwing off cash like a residential property with a tenant in it, but with, you know, class one tenants. We think that there are superannuation funds and pension funds around the world that won't be using a 9% discount rate to value these things. They'll be using 6% weighted average cost of capital, because they're paying their superannuants, you know, their pension investors, 3% or 4%. And so they're happy to pay much, much higher prices for these assets. And in that scenario, and that's a hypothetical, of course, but in that scenario, we think Macquarie's worth, you know, $180 a share, not $75 or $80 where it's trading at the moment. So that's the thesis for a company like that. The other one that I mentioned was Megaport. I won't go into as much detail because I realise we're limited for time, and I do have a few other stocks to talk about. But you look at Megaport. Megaport is Sweden in the world of data centres.
Okay.
Right? So if you're an enterprise, you're a big company, you're a Pricewaterhouse, or you're a, you know, a KPMG or something, you've got an office in Sydney, you've got an office in Hong Kong, you've got offices all around the world. All of those offices want to be close to their own data centres for the latency issue that I described earlier. But it might be that the Hong Kong office is connected to AWS, you know, Amazon Web Services. And here in Australia, you're with Salesforce or someone else. Those data centres, those suppliers, they don't want to talk to each other, and they don't want you talking to their competitors. So they don't make it easy. What Megaport does is provide the hardware and the software for you to be able to, for the Hong Kong office to talk to its data centre and for you to talk to your data centre and those data centres to talk to each other, and you feel like it's completely seamless.
Mm.
That's in essence what they do, and they are class leading. You know, they're genuinely world leading on this. And so we think, again, they're another business that's worth far more than where they're trading. And, you know, they are the world leader on that. A third business that we think is remarkable and other people think is expensive, and we don't, is Audinate.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you guys would know Audinate's Dante software really,
look,
really
Roger,
well.
This one kills us because back when we were doing our show on Ausbiz, and, you know, you probably spoke to us about Audinate when you came on Ausbiz, and neither of us bought. And it's been a few years and it's just run.
We think it's still got more to go because... Okay.
What is it? Isn't it just like digitizing cables?
Essentially what it's doing, it's...
I mean, they're not putting that in their investor presentation.
So all the audio, all the command, all the, you know, controlling is migrated from different cables, HDMI and fiber and whatever, into an Ethernet system, you know, and it just simplifies the installation, it simplifies the problem solving, it simplifies everything. And that's why it is now the world's leading solution.
Mm.
And so whether you're Bosch or you're, you know, Bang & Olufsen or you, you know, you're Yamaha, you know, there are literally dozens of OEMs manufacturing audio equipment that now have embedded in their hardware Audinate's Dante solution.
Mm.
Now, where we think the upside is not just the rollout globally.
Hold on, before you talk about the upside, just to give context for why the market might think it's expensive, it's trading about $20 a share and its PE ratio currently is about 100.
Mm. Yes.
So with that context
in mind. I actually thought it was 144.
Okay, well, it might have sold off a bit.
But if you're growing your earnings, if you're growing earnings at double-digit rates, high double-digit rates, then, you know, in theory, just the theory, if you're growing your earnings at 50% a year, then, you know, you're potentially halving your PE each year, right? So I'm less worried about that. Now, what they're doing is they're migrating or they're moving that Dante technology, they're bringing it to the visual side of a delivery of a concert or a conference or whatever. So it's not just going to be the audio, it's going to be the visual side as well. You know, and that's far bigger than the audio. You know, the opportunity there is sizable. And so we see Audinate as having significantly more upside than what people are currently giving it credit for. And we love that people think that it's expensive.
But I also think people are giving a lot of credit. It's up 131% in the last year.
Yeah, that's right. So it is up a lot, but we still think there's upside.
Love it.
Anyway, then I'll give you two more.
Actually, hold on, Roger, before you do, just to tease the next two stocks you're going to talk about, we're going to take a quick break here, and then on the other side, Roger's going to give us two more stocks, and we're also going to squeeze a question in about crypto as well.
Awesome.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Equity Mates. We're speaking to Roger Montgomery. We are hearing about some of the innovative growth companies that he's excited about right now. We've covered three so far: Macquarie Technology Group, Megaport and Audinate. You said you've got two more, so
look, if I can give a shameless plug with your permission, guys.
Please, yeah.
All of these stocks are owned by the Montgomery Small Companies Fund. So if you really want to see, the problem is I come on the show and I talk to you about the stocks we like, but you don't get me back to talk about when I've sold them.
Exactly. Yeah. That is always the challenge.
People go in and buy these things themselves and they don't know when to sell. Mm. So if you do want exposure to these sorts of stocks and, you know, leave someone else to do the buying and the selling, well, it's through the Montgomery Small Companies Fund. I hope you don't mind me mentioning that.
No, of course. We'll include a link to your website in the show notes. I
appreciate that.
Yeah.
So the other two that I'm going to mention, both have a similar thematic behind them, and it's probably the easiest way to make money in the stock market, which is to buy a retail concept that is rolling out stores at a rapid rate. So if you can buy a retail concept that's going from, you know, let's say 30 stores to 1,000 stores, and you can get in when it's only got 30 stores, you don't have to do anything.
Mm.
Just buy the stock and wait for it to get to 1,000 stores. It'll probably, and the share price will go up multiple, it'll be a 10 bagger.
Mm. Right? As long as the store concept has that scale in it.
Well, it's not going to go, go to 1,000 stores unless it's a successful concept. Mm. You know, I think, for example, in the next year or two, you know, we'll see GYG come to market.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I own shares in that business and it's unlisted currently. But, you know, that's a business that if it succeeds in the United States, it's got four stores in Chicago at the moment.
Mm.
You know, I think it could go to, you know, it could have 1,000 or 2,000 stores in the United States if it's successful.
Could you imagine?
Can you imagine how well the shares will do after it lists if it achieves that? And I'm not saying it will achieve it, but if it did, it would be hugely successful. So these two companies are on that spectrum in the sense that they've been successful in what they've done so far, but the opportunity for them to be successful is much, much greater in terms of scale. The first one is Lovisa.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Lovisa is a, you know, I don't want to call it costume jewelry, fashion jewelry. It's at a low price point, which means, again, not sensitive to the economy and interest rates. Most of its customers live at home with their parents, and most of their customers have a job, but they don't have a mortgage. So they don't care about interest rates going up. They're going to, you know, if they're going to treat themselves, they'll treat themselves to some Lovisa jewelry. You know, it's not going to break the bank for them. And so that concept has been remarkably successful. And so they're growing their stores at a great rate of knots. They've proven, you know, that they open stores on a monthly basis at a rate I've seen few merchants able to do. And they're doing the same thing overseas. So the upside for them, yep, go ahead.
Yeah, didn't they expand into Africa? Have I remembered that correctly?
They're expanding in countries that would surprise you.
Yeah.
And the cost of opening a store is so low. Their payback period for a store is incredibly short. And that, when I talked earlier about high margin and high rates of return on equity, that's what we're talking about there. So that's one that we really like. Another one is ARB. Now, ARB has always been seen by professional investors in Australia. ARB is the aftermarket four-wheel drive parts and accessories manufacturer. ARB has always been seen as being leveraged to the economy. When the economy's going well and people are flush with cash, they go and deck out their four-wheel drives, put a bull bar on, put, you know, spotlights on, put a fridge in the back, dual battery packs, all this sort of stuff. That's what ARB does. And the market is right that while they are Australian only, they are sensitive to the economic cycle. But I think what the market has underestimated is just how valuable its expansion overseas has become. It's opening stores in the United States, and it's gaining a reputation that its reputation is so good that in Thailand, where some of their equipment is manufactured, there are copies of their bull bars and people stick ARB stickers on the fake bull bar so that other people think they've got an ARB bull bar.
Nice. That's when you know you've got a good brand.
You've got a good brand when people do that. You might think, oh, well, that's a threat. No, because the quality of ARB is so much higher than the fakes. And because safety is an issue when you put a bull bar on the car, you want the real deal.
Yeah.
You don't want a fake. So the other thing that they're doing is they're lining up deals with Toyota and Ford at an OEM level. What that means is that if you buy a Ford Ranger in the United States or a Toyota Tundra in the US, which is a, you know, they're both SUVs, when you sit down at the dealership to spec out the model, you'll say, okay, I want running boards, I want sideboards on the car, and I want, you know, I want to have the spotlights and the roof rack and everything else. Well, Ford and Toyota have done a deal with ARB that ARB supplies those things. So at the point of purchase, you know, you are going to be ordering ARB equipment. Mm. And that is highly lucrative for ARB. And in terms of volume, you know, it really sets the stage for a much more rapid increases in volume than what we've seen when people have to go to an ARB store to buy it and then leave their car there and have it fitted aftermarket. Mm. Aftermarket means you've bought the vehicle and it's now an aftermarket edition. It's no longer aftermarket. You're buying Ford equipment from Ford or Toyota equipment from Toyota, but it's supplied by ARB because obviously, and then by the way, that's a great testament to their reputation, brand and quality that Toyota and Ford want to use their parts. So there's a couple of retail ideas where I think, again, there's value under your nose.
Yeah.
You know, there's optionality either in the growth of LaVisa stores or the growth of ARB stores plus their OEM deals.
I've got to say, regardless of what people think about these stocks, I just love the fact that it's Australian companies taking on the world. ARB pushing into the US, LaVisa pushing into South Africa and Europe and parts of Asia, Audinate becoming like a global standard.
It is a global standard.
You just love
it
to see
the standard.
Aussie companies doing good.
Yeah, it's unreal, and people don't realise that the great thing about small cap in Australia, and you know why I'm you know promoting the Montgomery Small Companies Fund is because you've got exposure to sectors and themes that you don't get in the top 100.
Mm.
You know, the top 100 is really kind of boring compared to what's available in small caps.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you know, so much of the top 100, well, especially the top 20, is just exposed to economic conditions. And
correct.
The macro drives.
A lot of them are very mature businesses.
Yeah.
Perhaps with the exception of things like, you know, CSL or Cochlear, Macquarie Bank, you know, where they're probably less sensitive, but nevertheless, yeah, there's, you know, that you've got limited options in the large cap space compared to small caps.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Roger, we want to close out with conversation around crypto.
Oh, I love it.
So let's answer the question with, is now the time to deploy cash into crypto?
Well, the short answer is yes, but the caveat is you should have asked me that question last year when I wrote about it. You know, in June last year, I wrote a blog post pointing out that Bitcoin and gold are hedges against what we call monetary inflation. So I just need to explain that for a second. There's the inflation that everyone knows about, which is, you know, the price of your latte going up. So the price of goods and services going up, that's price inflation. But there's something called monetary inflation. Monetary inflation is when central banks increase liquidity by injecting cash into markets and into the financial system. In June last year, we could see that even though central banks were talking tough on interest rates, they were expanding liquidity. That means that there's more liquidity going into financial markets and economies, and so there'll be a group of people who don't like that monetary inflation, and they think, well, fiat, you know, and I think some of them, you know, are quite special people, but they think fiat currencies are doomed, you know, and I want to get out of fiat because there's so much of it, supply is increasing, it's all going to go down, and therefore I want to be outside of that. And gold is one way of being outside of it, and so is Bitcoin. Bitcoin or cryptocurrency is another way. So in June last year, I wrote that, look, I can see if you follow liquidity, you can see liquidity is going up. That's going to be really good for gold, and it's going to be really good for Bitcoin. And it has been. And then another event happened for Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, and that was on January 11 this year, when the SEC in the United States finally approved, after 10 years of lobbying, finally approved spot Bitcoin-backed ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Sometimes when I hear myself using the lingo, I just think, I sound like an alien life form, by the way. You know, so what does that mean? Prior to January 11, you could buy an exchange-traded fund that was backed, that followed Bitcoin, but it wasn't backed by spot Bitcoin or, you know, live Bitcoin. It was backed by futures on Bitcoin. So there's a couple of degrees of separation there. But on January 11, the SEC approved live Bitcoin-backed ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And that day, about 10 or 11 exchange-traded funds launched all at the same time. And one of them, the biggest one, is the BlackRock exchange-traded fund, which is called, the code is IBIT, I-B-I-T. And I own some of that because I think it's a really seamless way of owning some Bitcoin. Now, why would I want to own Bitcoin? I'm a quality value investor, a quality growth investor, and I think growth and value are two sides of the same coin. That's another hour-long discussion we can talk about another time. But what I saw happening was I saw that there was going to be... Look, I've been around long enough to know how bubbles form. Bubbles form because you get lots of buyers, and whether their thesis is right or wrong, you just get lots of buyers, you know. And what happens is their buying pushes the thing up, and when it pushes that thing up, it reinforces their thesis. The thesis might be wrong, but hey, it's going up, so it must be right. And what I saw happening is that after January 11, there was going to be a lot of money sitting on the sidelines where it's just too complicated buying a wallet and then loading up Dex Screener and then, you know, and, you know, making sure your wallet's offline. And, you know, there's just so many, it's so complicated. And my son's in this space, you know, so I know how to do it. But it's complicated transferring money to a wallet. Then, you know, some wallets are on some blockchains and then they're not on other blockchains, and so you can buy Ether but you can't buy Solana, and you know, oh my gosh, it's just, people are already tuning out listening to this, right? And so what I saw with these Bitcoin backed ETFs is it was just a simple, seamless, frictionless way for people to get exposure. What would they do? They would get exposure. And so they would start buying. Now, as soon as they start buying these ETFs, the ETFs are spot Bitcoin backed, which means they have to go out and buy immediately all the money that flows in. They have to go and buy Bitcoin, which drives the price of Bitcoin up. And then people see Bitcoin going up and they go, well, I've got to buy some of this ETF because the Bitcoin's going up. And guess what? They buy the ETF. The ETF then has to go and buy Bitcoin. Bitcoin goes up. You get this virtuous circle where the Bitcoin price goes up, so more people, so you end up with FOMO. You end up with the fear of missing out. At some point this year, we'll see that FOMO emerge where Bitcoin goes up. What I also like about it is that there are a lot of reputable institutions that run stockbroking firms in the US, for example, that are banned from owning these ETFs. They're banned from recommending Bitcoin to their clients because they're too risky. Now, I used to work at Merrill Lynch, and I know that, you know, I know that when stockbrokers are banned from buying something and it's going up, that eventually the pressure is too great. The clients pressure the brokers to buy it. The brokers say, I can't buy it. So the clients then leave the broker and go elsewhere to buy it, where they can. Eventually, the broker then goes to management. The broker says to management, we're losing clients. We're losing revenue. We've got to get on board. And eventually, you know, the boom gate is opened and the brokers can start buying. And then you get a flood more, another flood of money flowing into these ETFs buying Bitcoin, which then have to go and buy Bitcoin, and Bitcoin goes up again. That's, by the way, the point where you sell.
Yeah, so that was, you know, all, that was the question that was forming as I was hearing all that. Like, if the thesis is the bubble thesis...
Yeah, there's no fundamental reason for owning. I don't believe it's going to be an alternative to cash.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe it's going to be an alternative to the US dollar, right? I don't think that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, that, and everyone will debate me on this. Oh, no, I think it's, you know, fiat's dead and, you know, long live fiat, you know, and we're going to own Bitcoin and that's going to be the way we transact. I don't think that.
I think a lot of people...
I do think it's going up.
I think a lot of people listening probably resonate with that, like, and... We've seen it go up. It's above $70,000 again today. So the question then becomes, what's the sell signal?
Yeah, well, I don't know, because here's the problem. When you're buying, but not based on fundamental value, where you can compare. So everyone says to me, oh, it's, you know, everyone says, I think Bitcoin has a fundamental value. You know, the people who tell me that I'm wrong about it having a. So I say, okay, well, tell me what the estimated value is. Calculate the estimated value. You can't, right? So it doesn't have a fundamental value that can be estimated, can be calculated to a dollar value. You know, it can't.
Yeah, now Bitcoin maxis who are yelling at the phone, there's some way they calculate it based on like the flow of money supply and stuff like that.
That's popularity.
Different conversation.
Look, I've had so many debates with people, and I own Bitcoin, right? You're talking to somebody who owns it, not somebody who's rejected it and isn't going to touch it. But I think my reason for owning it is that I just think it's going to be more popular.
Mm.
And all of the arguments I've seen for valuing it are based ultimately on its popularity going up.
Mm.
When you boil it down, the person is saying to me, I think more people will buy it. Okay, well, that's sentiment, that's popularity. And knowing when to sell is very hard because what you're asking me to do is predict when the popularity is going to change. Now, I know that the popularity is going to increase, and that's why that was my thesis for owning it, right? And why? Because number one, liquidity was going up, and so people want to get out of fiat. They want to hedge against monetary inflation. Popularity is going to go up. So that was one reason for buying it back in June last year. Second reason for buying it was another reason it was going to become more popular, and that was because the ETFs had just launched. So again, it's all based on popularity, not based on a fundamental value. It's just being driven by more people wanting to own it. I don't know when that stops, so it's really hard for me to tell you when to get out. I don't know when that's going to be. I will just literally wet my finger and stick it in the air, and if the breeze blows in a certain direction, you know, that's it. I'm trying to tell you this is a speculation. Yeah. It's not an investment. Mm. It's entirely different to what we've talked about earlier. You know, with Audinate and Lovisa and ARB and those businesses, you know, Macquarie Technology and Megaport, we can estimate a value based on the cash flow that those businesses will generate. We know when they're going to be extremely expensive because we can compare it to our valuation. We know when they're cheap because we can compare it to our valuation. Can't do that with Bitcoin.
Mm.
And so this is just a folly. It's a speculation. You do it with money you can afford to lose. So far, you know, I've got a little bit more money that I can afford to lose now because it's gone up.
Nice. Well, that's a great place to end, Roger. As always, it's a pleasure to chat with you. Took a lot out of the conversation today. We'll put a link to the website for the Small Companies Fund and also to the book in our show notes. But as always, thank you for taking the time with us today.
Delighted. It's always great to talk with you guys, and thank you for giving me the freedom to talk about so many different things.
No, we appreciate it, Roger. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. See you guys.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.